Welcome back to Open Line. Bob Singleton sitting in for Fred Anderle on WOSU 820. This hour, your chance to compare notes with a panel of Central Ohio librarians. The best books for a summer's read. You can pass on your recommendations. If you've got questions about a book you've heard of, you aren't quite sure what it's about, maybe we can help you out this morning. Let me introduce our guests around the table here in the studio. We've got Mandy Knapp from the Worthington Library, Northwest Adult Services Librarian. Mary Kelly, Columbus Metropolitan Library, Gahanna Branch Manager. Sandy Drake, Grandview Heights Public Library, Circulation Services Staff Member. Welcome, guests, to Open Line.
Hello.
Hi.
Are you ready?
Yes.
This is always a neat show. Always get a lot of callers, and it's always interesting. People are always looking for a good book, and we can pick up a lot of recommendations here. Let's just go around the table. What are at the moment, the most popular books at each of your libraries, the ones at the top of the waiting list? Let's start with Mandy Knapp.
Well, I've got to tell you, the one that we're all excited about at Northwest is Stephanie Meyer's Breaking Dawn. It's the fourth and final book in a series that began with Twilight, which is going to be a movie this winter. It's about a young girl who falls in love with a vampire and a werewolf. And in this fourth book, we're going to discover whether it's the vampire or the werewolf.
So which one gets the girl?
Yes, exactly.
Who's going to play the characters in the film, if you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Other books that people have been looking for, a lot of good beach reads, summertime stuff. Sophia Kinsella, the Shopaholic series has been really popular. The Jane Green books, which are also like that, very, lighthearted kind of love stories. Love the One You're With by Emily Griffin has also been a lot of reserves on that one. And one I especially recommend, The House at Riverton by Kate Morton. If you like books like The Remains of the Day or those, turn-of-the-century British novels, this is the kind of one that you should be looking out for. It's a wonderful read, nonstop. I can't speak highly enough about it.
Sandy Drake.
Well, at Grandview, we have the popular authors continue to be popular, John Grisham and James Patterson and those. But one of the interesting things in the summer is that the audiobooks increase because people are leaving on vacations. They want it for the car. They want it for the beach. And there's a little lag time. So it's a different list than the fiction and nonfiction books that are going across the counter. So Harry Potter is still very popular in the audiobooks. And both A Thousand Splendid Suns and The Kite Runner are among those that are circulating the most. And Jan Caron's latest, Home to Holly Hills, The Golden Compass, which has, of course, come out in movie form since. So it's just interesting to see that the audiobooks reach their peak in the summer.
Mary Kelly.
Hi. I'm very excited that a book that's coming out came out last month is The Likeness by Tanya French. And if some of you might remember that her book In the Woods last year hit the bestseller list. And it was a combination of a police procedural and a psychological thriller, a story of a young girl that's murdered out in a suburb outside of Dublin. And at that same place, 20 years previously, three children disappeared in the woods in that same place. One returned without any memory, traumatized, blood in his shoes. Well, he turns out to be the detective who investigates the young girl's murder. Is it appropriate for him to do that? Well, probably not. But that story was so compelling. Well, the new one, The Likeness, is about his partner, Cassie Maddox. And so I'm real excited to read that. I haven't read it yet. And, just to dovetail on what you just said, audiobooks are hot. And one we've been listening to in the car, we just got back from Pennsylvania, is Tony Horowitz, A Voyage Long and Strange, Rediscovering the New World. I always think with audiobooks, for me, it's easier to listen to nonfiction because you stop and go. And this is popular history, basically. He realized that we know when the pilgrims came and we know when Columbus discovered America. But what happened in between? So he takes a trip and follows the route of Coronado. He goes down to Santa Hispaniola and visits the places where Columbus, discovered all his travels. And, you know, right now we're all thinking of stay vacations where people don't travel very much this summer. So that's being encouraged. And, you know, travel memoirs and travelogues are a good way to spend your summer, too. So I would recommend that one, too.
What was the name of that procedural with the blood in the shoes again?
In the Woods by Tanya French.
Okay.
Wonderful. It just can, you just can't put it down.
I'm making a note. That sounds
yes.
like a good one.
And The Likeness is the follow-up to that book that just came out.
All right. Listeners, what do you have to say? We got a line for you at 292-8513, 292-8513. We just had a caller a second ago, but he bailed on us. Come on back. We've got lines available. While we're waiting, something I wanted to mention. For listeners who enjoyed the PBS Masterpiece Theater crime series, Prime Suspect, that's the one that starred Helen Mirren as London Metropolitan Police Detective Inspector Jane Tennyson, a series of British crime novels with a character who seems similar to Jane Tennyson, I stumbled across. It features Detective Superintendent Diane Fry. Fry has a sense of humor, but it's dark and biting. She knows her way around a crime scene. These novels are all by Stephen Booth. He's a former newspaperman. They take place in the Derbyshire Peak District of England, east of Manchester, north of Birmingham. They all feature Fry and her colleague Ben Cooper. First in the series was Black Dog, named by the London Evening Standard as one of the best six crime novels of 2000. I'm a little behind. It's already 8 years old, but it was my first time out, and it was a happy discovery. I'm reading the second in the series, Dancing with the Virgins, and I got it from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Well, come on, callers, where are you? What is your biggest surprise in your reading this season? Have you come across any books yourself that you find stunning and really caught you by surprise? Yes.
I just finished the book Infidel. I don't know how long it's been out, actually, but it just came across the desk one day, and so I took it home and loved it. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the author's name correctly. Ayan Hirsi Ali. It's the story of the woman who grew up in Somalia,
yes. mm-hmm.
became a member of the Dutch Parliament, and now lives in the U.S.
And
very
now
compelling.
She's under, I mean, she has serious security problems.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. part of why she left yeah. Holland, is because her neighbors in her apartment building said, we don't want it blown up from under us, and could you move on?
Yes, she is an extraordinary mm-hmm. person, and she's so striking when you see her on television. We have a caller. Let's go to Carolyn. Hello, Carolyn. Welcome to Open Line.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a book that I just finished, and it's not light at all. But if you are short on time and what you read really matters to you, I would recommend The Known World by Edward Jones. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. It's a story. It's a period piece, and it's about slave owning blacks in the South before the Civil War. And it has really held my interest. It's over 300 pages, and I went through it pretty quickly. I mean, it just really kept me interested.
What did you like best about it?
The writing is kind of interesting because he kind of flows back and forth in time, and so that's a little different from just having it move right along in time, one day to the next or 1 month to the next. It jumps around a little bit, so you have to kind of keep on your toes, and it also provides you little bits of insight about the individuals much later in time, much beyond where the book actually covers. I think there's a lot of realism to it. I mean, there's some things that happen that are utterly tragic in there, and other people come through all right in the end, and so it's a lot like life.
Carolyn, thank you very much.
Sure.
What about politics? We're getting deeper and deeper into the season. McCain books, Obama books. How do they stack up? Which is most in demand? Can you say anything like? Would you notice that sort of thing? Or are either of those books being read by people? They've both written biographies, I think, or autobiographies. And
well, Obama's book was very, very popular last
year. The Audacity of Hope.
When it came out, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and it still goes in and out. But honestly, I haven't seen a lot of requests on. You know, I remember 4 years ago, we seemed to get so many requests about different political books and from pundits and all sorts of things, but I'm not seeing that so much. Of course, it's early in the season, so maybe we'll see more requests.
Well, maybe not. I read in the paper today all these candidates are spending huge amounts of money on TV commercials. We're all going to probably see more than we want. We have another caller, and we got a line open at 292-8513, 292-8513. Also, if you'd like to send us an email, here's the address, openline@wosu.org. All right, let's see what Adam has to say. Welcome to Open Line, Adam.
Hi. I had a quick question for the librarians, actually. When I was in high school, I read a book that had a lot of influence on me. And I'm from a small town, and now since I moved to Columbus, I've not been able to find it. However, even when I Google it, it says that it's out of print, and I haven't been finding it in the library. I was wondering if they had any advice of where I would be able to find a book if I've been told that it is out of print.
Did you want to own the book, or did you want to just read it again? Well, one option for you, and I would, if it's not in any of our collections, is always the interlibrary loan service that all public libraries do offer, where we can borrow books from other, libraries in the state of Ohio or even outside the state. It takes a little longer, but that's always an option for you. Since you read it once and you know it exists, any of our libraries should be able to find that for you.
Okay. All right. Great.
Thank you, Adam.
All right, thank you.
Let's go to Nancy. Hello, Nancy. Welcome.
Hi, Bob. To kind of follow up on your recommendation on the Prime Suspect, the creator of Prime Suspect was a woman named Linda LaPlante, and she has a series out now. It's at least two books, and it's a younger version of Jane Tennyson. Her name is the protagonist is Anna Travis. And I know the library carries it. Above Suspicion is the first one. And one that's out more recently is The Red Dahlia. And both of those are very good.
Did she, you say she was the creator of Prime Suspect. Did she write the scripts? Was she a script writer?
I think at the very least she was in production, and I think she wrote most of the scripts. And when you read, in particular, when you read Above Suspicion, you know how sometimes some writers write as if they're almost writing a screenplay because it's very descriptive and you can visualize a lot of things. And they're quite good in terms of thrillers. Anything by Daniel Silva, who's got one out, just came out recently. And a change of pace for people who perhaps are out there trying to figure out how to use local produce. How to Pick a Peach is a great food reference book. It's by, I don't know the author's name, but he's a food writer for the L.A. Times, and I think he was a James Beard winner. And it talks about seasonal fruits and vegetables and simple recipes on how to use them. So that's kind of a range of books for people.
Do you remember what he said? How do you pick a peach?
Well, it's very much, some people really don't know how to go and purchase a fresh vegetable in terms of aroma, the texture of the skin. Some fruits and vegetables will ripen after you buy them, and some of them won't. I mean, it is interesting information, and an interesting feature in the book is something called One Simple Dish, which is a great, one of the things I dislike about cookbooks is when you find a recipe and you have to buy half the ingredients. In this instance, it's usually that fruit or vegetable and one or two other ingredients. So it's a good food reference book.
All All right. Nancy, thank you very much. It's just like a home improvement book where you have to go out and buy tools. Yes.
Another piggybacking on her Nancy's reference to scriptwriters and how you can often tell that in or screenwriters and how you can often tell their style in their books. One screenwriter that's become a prolific novelist is Stephen Cannell, who was the creator of the Rockford Files series. And so that's always a good one to recommend if someone likes that style, the good author.
A Perfect Peach also reminded me of Barbara Kingsolver's new book, which is a nonfiction title called Animal Vegetable Miracle, where she and her family try to live off of local produce and be sustainable for a year, and like, and how hard it is and the trials that they go through.
Listeners, any more recommendations? We got a line for you at 292-8513. 292-8513, and you can reach us online by email, openline@wosu.org. Through the course of this this week, I've had several authors on the air, and in case anyone listening has been trying to remember the name of that book we talked about, and you can't, I'll give you some tips. Just yesterday, the book was Havana Nocturne, How the Mob Owned Cuba and Then Lost It to the Revolution. That is a very interesting book by T.J. English, how the American mob joined forces with the Cuban dictator Batista and turned Havana into a devil's playground. The party ended when Fidel Castro's revolutionaries came to town in around Christmas Eve, 1959, was when they were all running around trying to clean out the cash boxes in the casinos, and they didn't always make it. English writes about crime and criminals. His two earlier books were bestsellers, Paddywhacked and The Westies. The Westies, weren't the Westies a New York City gang back around the turn of the century? He's also written television screenplays for NYPD Blue and Homicide. That book, again, yesterday was Havana Nocturne, How the Mob Owned Cuba and Then Lost It to the Revolution. Well, trying to remember. Geez, I don't know. I read a book and I forget it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, I have a good book, a nonfiction book to share. It's called Where Did I Leave My Glasses? The What and When of Why of Normal Memory Loss by Martha Lear. And this book calmed me down because I feel the same way. I forget. I go upstairs and I get up there and I don't know why I went upstairs. But she talks about she's interviewed all these neuroscientists, and she talks about how the brain works and what normal memory loss is and what it isn't. Our emotions edit our memory, but it's funny, gives us tips on how to, keep that memory going, which is just basic stuff like eating healthy and sleeping and avoiding stress. But
does it say how where the line might be drawn as to whether how normal you are, how long it takes you to realize that the book you're reading is a book you've read before?
And that happens to all of us. It depends on what's going on in your life. It depends on what stress you're under. And she does have a chart about what is abnormal memory loss as opposed to normal memory loss. But it's witty, and she talks about herself, and I would recommend it to any of us baby boomers who are worried about why I can't find my glasses.
Good.
It was a great title.
Good idea. Let's go to, we have a caller. Let's go to Robert. Hello, Robert. Welcome.
Good morning. Always love to hear about the books. I just finished J.R.R. Tolkien's The Book, The Children of Hurin, and I find the audiobooks are great with all the orange barrels around Columbus right now. So if you're sitting in traffic rather than listening to junk on the radio, listen to a good book. So I just wanted to thank the ladies. They are bringing us great books, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much, Robert. Let me introduce our panelists again before we go to Carol. We've got Mandy Knapp from the Worthington Library, Northwest Adult Services. We got Mary Kelly, Columbus Metropolitan Library. She's the Gahanna Branch Manager. And Sandy Drake, Grandview Heights Public Library Circulation Services staff member. Let's go to Carol. Hello. Hello, Carol. Welcome.
Oh, hello, Bob. I wanted to piggyback on the idea of reading about food and enjoying it. And the wonderful woman, she's now deceased, but MFK Fisher. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the librarians are familiar with her. But you learn about history and her life and the food at the same time. A good example would be when she was living in Paris, and she put tangerines on the heater, the thing with the steam, where, mm-hmm. I forget what you call it. But anyway, the tangerine heated up, and its skin became very crisp. And when she would open it up, the juice would be warm, and she talks about it running down her chin. You know, and you just want to have a tangerine. She talks about climbing up on the Swiss Alps. She's completely exhausted, and there's a much older man at the top, and he just hands her a piece of chocolate. And she talks about this chocolate dissolving in her throat. And, I mean, it's the sexiest thing you'll ever read in your life. And so she just brings food alive, but you're on a train, and the Nazis are getting on the train. I mean, you're feeling her history, and you're seeing how the food is part of your life. And the way she integrates it, it's just a joy to read everything she's written. She talks about creating a meal, how to seduce a man, but in fact the meal is so heavy, you know, the man wouldn't be able to move. <No. you know? laughs> So she does some tongue-in-cheek things like that. One other quick thing, I've been converted to something I never thought would happen. I'm a docent at the Wexner Center, and we've had Jeff Smith and the Bone cartoons, the graphic novel. And I don't know whether your librarians know about him. Mm-hmm. I know he's very popular, but it's like a 1,500-page graphic novel. And I was never a cartoon person. And I'm telling you, I won't even let my grandchildren touch these books until I've read them first. Mm-hmm. And Grandma Ben is one of the characters. She's sort of half Popeye, but she's based on a friend's grandmother who lives in southern Ohio, who has Adidas running shoes and chases cows and jumps fences and everything. And also some of the imagery, which it's beautiful to look at, can be from the Hocking Hills. And it just, you know, here's a local person who started this, created this this idea of Bone in the Lantern years ago. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, I never thought I'd be hooked on cartoons, and I'm completely addicted now.
Mm-hmm. Carol, what a great call. Thank you very much.
Well, I love hearing about what other people like to read, so thanks very much.
Thank you. Well, we're coming down to our break, but we have an email. John called in he wants to know if librarians could discuss Christopher Moore and Louise Erdrich.
Erdrich?
Erdrich.
Oh, yeah.
You know, don't want to put you on the spot, but tell you what, maybe think about it for a minute and a half. We'll go away, come back after these program notes, and see what we can find out about Christopher Moore and Louise
Erdrich.
Erdrich, okay, on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Seth Rogen stars in the new movie comedy Pineapple Express. It's an unlikely hybrid of an action film and a stoner film. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about Pineapple Express and about being part of the Judd Apatow juggernaut that made the 40-year-old virgin knocked up and super bad. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins later this afternoon. It starts at 1 o'clock, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 78 degrees at 10:30. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. Be sure to listen to Morning Edition, now on WOSU 89.7 FM. For your weekday morning update on the news, it's from 5 to 9 a.m. Your membership means that all of your trusted local and national news and information will continue on WOSU. Is it time to renew your membership? Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to wosu.org. And thanks for your support of WOSU 820 NPR News. In the weather forecast for today, cloudy skies this morning, a chance of a rain shower, and then maybe some sunshine will peek through later this afternoon. A high near 90 today. Mostly clear tonight and a low of 62. And then partly sunny for Friday, a slight chance of afternoon showers, and a high of 88. And now, back to Open Line.
Welcome back to Open Line. Bob Singleton in for Fred Anderle on WOSU 820. This hour, we're talking books, best books for a summer's read. We've got a room full of experts, Central Ohio librarians, Mary Knapp, Worthington Library, Northwest Adult Services librarian, Mary Kelly, Columbus Metropolitan Library, Gahanna Branch Manager, Sandy Drake, Grandview Heights Public Library Circulation Services staff member. Your calls at 292-8513, 292-8513. A caller asked if our librarians could discuss Christopher Moore and Louise
Erdrich.
And turns out they can. Let's see, what do our experts have to say about these two authors?
Well, I'm a fan of both authors. I just remember Christopher Moore is famous for writing You mm-hmm. Suck, A Love Story, yeah. which is, if you like books about vampires, again, there's a sequel to it, too, whose name escapes me at the moment. But they're both kind of light reads about a young man who is seduced and falls in love with an older vampire woman. You know, it's kind of like a chick lit for men sort of book. Louise Erdrich is kind of considered more serious. Her most recent one was The Plague of Doves, which was an excellent book covering this family's history. She writes a lot about North Dakota Indian reservations and like mm-hmm. the interactions between the, especially the German immigrants and the Native Americans mm-hmm. there. And this one covers this like age-long battle between two of the families and how they interacted with each other and affected each other's lives in all these subtle and amazing ways. If you like her, you might also like Sherman Alexie, especially The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fistfight in Heaven, and The Indian Killer. He's also a Native American writer. He's from Washington State, though, near Spokane, Washington.
Spokane. That's going to come up in our next hour. I'll talk about that in a little while. Anything else on these two authors?
No. Louise Erdrich has been a favorite of mine for years, too. Beat Queen and all her early things. She's been writing for over 20, 25 years. Just a strong characters, lots of emotion in her stories.
Mm-hmm. We have another, email. This is from Tom. The OCLC offers a new online book lookup service. This is an online database of books that is attempting to include every library in the United States and perhaps elsewhere. The service is based on an index which is held in computer memory for very fast lookup, he says. You all know about OCLC. There is apparently a link in the Columbus Library website to this
yes,
service.
Actually, that database at OCLC that the emailer talks about, we've had access to in a paid database through our libraries. But now anyone from home can go to worldcat.org and access that same information. And we also have a link to that world, and I'm sure the other libraries do, mm-hmm. in some of our best websites on our website at columbuslibrary.org.
And it's WorldCat as in catalog.
Yes. Mm-hmm. WorldCat. All one word, .org.
And yet another email from Kim. The Post-American World by Fareed Zakaria, the Newsweek columnist and international editor. She says, it gave me hope for the future amid all the doom and gloom media hype about the changes in our global society. Well, The Post-American World by Fareed Zakaria. Listeners, do you have anything to add to the discussion? We've got a line for you at 292-8513, 292-8513. What books have you read lately? What's one that was just so great you can't quite get it out of your mind? Is there anything that was so bad you put it back on the shelf before you even finished? I've had a couple of those, but as usual, I can't remember the titles. Someone mentioned Spokane, Washington. Let me tell you, this coming hour, we're going to this next hour, we're going to be talking with author Linda Lawrence Hunt about a book that you would enjoy. It's called Bold Spirit, Helga Espy's Forgotten Walk Across Victorian America. A 36-year-old woman with her 18-year-old daughter started out from Spokane, Washington, and they walked every step to New York City, and they did it in 1896. And family members down through the years had no idea that their ancestor had done this thing for various reasons, which we'll be discussing next hour. Helga Espy's family silenced, that's the verb they use, silenced this whole story. It's fascinating. And the name of the book, again, Bold Spirit, Helga Espy's Forgotten Walk Across Victorian America. I enjoyed it. I think you would, too. Listen next hour and learn more. See, we're going to have another. Have you either any of our guests heard of this?
No.
Heard of this book?
Sounds great.
Thanks for bringing it to our attention.
All right, I got a call coming in, and I'm waiting for the technology to get out of the way.
Isn't that
so
always
we can talk?
Welcome to
our Nancy.
World.
There she is. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to Open Line.
Thank you, and I'm on a cell phone but pulled over. There's a book that was written by the wife of a classmate of mine that went to a military high school with me, and it's called Finding Billy. And I don't know that it was ever published in a hardback, but I have the softback version, and the author's name is Diana Dale, and it followed her internet journey trying to find out where her Uncle Billy was. He was a P-38 pilot flying out of an air base in Italy during World War II, and they knew he was shot down, sort of the general area in northern Italy. And it's just a fascinating book. I'm reading it the second time in case I miss anything. It's just a wonderful, loving tribute to an uncle that she never knew, and It's just wonderful.
Finding Billy.
Finding Billy, yeah. And she had started it because her mother had spent 3 years writing letters after they were notified he was missing in action. And then a year and a day from the date he was pronounced missing, then he was declared, dead. And she kept thinking, he sustained a head injury and he doesn't know who he is. And she just never gave up. And as a gift to her grandmother, and Billy was the woman's only son. And so as a gift to her grandmother and her mother, Billy's sister, she embarked on this internet journey trying to find out his flying buddies and people that had gone to flight school with him, and it's just I can't praise it enough. I could not put it down, and again, if I read a book a second time, it's wonderful. Yeah. It's just wonderful.
What is the author's name again?
Diana Dale.
D-A-L-E.
Yeah, D-A-L-E. And I think it was published about 2003, and I don't know the publishing house, but anyway, it was just pure joy. You felt like you were standing right behind her at the, as she's on that computer, reaching out to people and people that read her email, and then they have, They keep giving her other possibilities of where she can go, and then a newspaper reporter in Bolzano, Italy, got pulled into it, and then an Italian woman who lived in the area, she started interviewing and doing some investigative work for her, and it's like a whodunit. Well, not quite a whodunit, but it's absolutely a fascinating, wonderful, loving read.
I would ask you if she ever finds Billy, but I don't want to spoil the suspense.
Yeah. Well, see, you'll have to read it.
Yeah, yeah.
Good job.
Nancy, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have a caller, Tom. Hello, Tom. Welcome to Open Line.
I just really wanted to recommend two authors. One is Gary Jennings, and if anybody, and these have, I guess, been around for a while, but if anybody likes fiction set in historical settings where you can actually, the research that was done was good and accurate, you can learn an awful lot about, I mean, he writes about the Aztec culture, he also writes another series about circuses around the Civil War period. But fascinating, very engaging, you know, highly recommend it. And the other author is Vince Flynn, sort of, I don't know, along the lines of maybe Ludlum. But
his name again? What was his name again? Vince
Flynn.
Vince Flynn.
Flynn, okay.
Independence Day is the title. I don't know, Third Option, Final Solution, maybe. I'm not very conversant on the titles, but they're wonderful books. And I'm glad you're having this show. I appreciate all that your people do.
Tom, thank you very much. Comments?
Another Vince Flynn one is Protect and Defend, which mm-hmm. is one of our popular audiobooks right now, and all of his are good.
We have an email from, Good News and Bad News. Anything by William Trevor is a real treasure, either novel or short stories, and he's got lots of both. On the downside, this year's overhyped disappointment, Beautiful Children by Charles Bach. This emailer says that book was a waste of time. So, William Trevor gets a thumbs up. Charles Bach, not so much.
I agree.
Thanks, emailer. And our email address, if you like to send us a note, openline@wosu.org. And our telephone lines, of which there are many available at the moment, 292-8513, 292-8513. Another book. This isn't a book. This was a National Geographic magazine cover story from May of 2007. One of our guests this week, author Charles C. Mann, wrote this article all about Jamestown, Virginia. Captain John Smith, Pocahontas, the settling of Jamestown in 1607, and how practically everything you've been taught about that subject is wrong. And it was a very interesting program and article. It was titled America Found and Lost, the May 2007 National Geographic Magazine. But this same author has written a best-selling book, 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus. And it touches on similar subjects, surprising things that you never knew about these early arrivals, European arrivals at any rate, to this continent. And how things they did hundreds of years ago affect the way we live today. Again, Charles C. Mann, his book, 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus. And if you want to get a short course in that subject, check out May 2007 National Geographic, the cover story. Everything you want to know about Jamestown. It was America Found and Lost. All right. Anybody else have anything on their plate they wanted to toss out?
I have one that I want to share that I've been suggesting to people. This is the book that Stephen King wrote about in Entertainment Weekly back early this winter, about how a publisher can almost kill a book with poor handling and a poor cover. The book's title, and it's a great book, he loved it, but he was so disappointed in how the publisher promoted this book. He just, you know, and that was what his article was about. The book's called Fieldwork, and it's by Mishka Berlinski. It's part mystery novel, part fictionalized memoir, and actually even part anthropological history of the tribes in northern Thailand. It's about a reporter journalist and his girlfriend who go to Thailand. She starts teaching there, and he learns about the suicide of an American anthropologist who had been imprisoned for murder. And he becomes obsessed with her life and decides to write a book about her. He investigates her life by talking to her family, talking to the Christian missionary. He becomes involved with the Christian missionary family of the man she murdered, and learns all about, you learn a lot about the tribal life in Thailand. It just catches, it's so compelling, and you just keep reading to find out why this woman ended up in prison, you know, a woman of promise, great career, and what happened to her. And of course, I won't give you any spoilers, but it's called Fieldwork by Mischa Berlinski. But King was just so, he just used that as an example of how poor marketing and poor support can almost kill a book.
Didn't
and
Stephen King do a book online?
He did.
At some point?
Years,
wasn't he,
yeah.
Was that an attempt to come up with some sort of alternative to the way the publishing business is run, or was that just something he did for the fun of it?
He might have. I'm not sure exactly why. I know at one point, too, he wrote just an audiobook. There was a book of his that came out just in audio years ago. But he does write for Entertainment Weekly a lot and does book reviews, the state of writing, the state of publishing.
Well, that's kind of an odd thing, just in audio.
If you really
enjoyed the book and you wanted to go back to it, you'd have to take notes. You'd have to transcribe.
Uh-huh.
That's an awful lot of work to expect a listener to go through to read.
Well, isn't all our contents coming in all different ways now?
I guess. Let's see. We have Dave. Hello, Dave. Welcome to Open Line.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Enjoy your show. I wanted to tell you about a really interesting book. It's called Children of Jihad. And it's by Jared Cohen, C-O-H-E-N. And this fellow is a graduate of Stanford University. He's Jewish, and he had the nerve to travel throughout the Islamic world, which is, you know, very frightening if you're Jewish, to go to Iran, to go through Lebanon, through Syria, into the Palestinian camps where some of these people are, you know, would kill you if they knew you were Jewish, and interview these people as a young American talking to a young Arab. And I just thought this was the most fascinating book I read for quite a while. You will be astonished about Lebanon and Hezbollah. Revelations about those people are shocking and in some ways pleasing, out of regards shocking. But for example, the University of Beirut has 200 operatives who will not admit they're operatives. They were like cancer cells. You can't identify them, but they're there. And it's interesting. It's just a fascinating book.
What do you mean operatives?
Spies.
Spies for who? Who? Which side? Who are they spying for?
They're working for Hezbollah.
Ah.
Which is an agency of Iran, basically.
Were any of his views altered in any way because of things he'd learned from people he'd talked to?
I believe so, for sure. And he now works for the United States Department of State, which is why I recommend this book. I myself have been through the Middle East a couple of times. I've been to Iran. I was threatened with death myself while I was in Iran. And I tell you, there are some strange, weird people over there, but I really believe that the majority of people still like America. And I really firmly believe that, you know, some of these governments are minority governments just forcing the people to do their will. But the thing about suicide bombers, that was very frightening, too. There's something in there about those people. And you got to read the book.
What is the author's name again, Dave?
First name, Jared, J-A-R-E-D, and the last name, Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, and it's called Children of Jihad.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Bye.
Listeners, we get a line for you at 292-8513, 292-8513, online, openline at WOSU.org. If you want to send some email, openline at WOSU.org. Our guests around the table, The Librarians. Mandy Knapp, Worthington Library, Mary Kelly, Columbus Metropolitan Library, Sandy Drake, Grandview Heights Public Library. Here's one of my guests, early, I think, Monday. Julie Zicafus. You hear her from time to time on NPR talking about her world. She owns 80 acres just outside of Marietta down in southeastern Ohio. She's written a wonderful book. It's called Letters from Eden, A Year at Home in the Woods. And that is where she lives, in the woods. She wanders around. She observes wildlife and all sorts of creatures. And her book is a collection of essays organized by seasons, what the author calls ruminations on the natural world just outside my door. She writes about these creatures. She paints them, photographs them, talks about them in commentaries on National Public Radio. And she has wonderful stories. And it was the second time, I've been lucky, I got to talk to her on this show. And I'm hoping that she'll be back because her her observations about wildlife are fascinating.
Bob, that brings to mind another author, John Katz. I don't know if you, you or your listeners have ever read any of his books, nonfiction. He was a he is a New York writer. He used to write for New York Times or New Yorker, major publications. Anyway, he retired at a very young age to a farm in upstate New York, Bedlam Farm. And so there's a series of books he's written, and it's I will say that unlike the one you just described, they're a little more focused on the animals, the dogs and the various animals of Bedlam Farm. And his name's easy to remember, therefore, because his last name's Katz. It's K-A-T-Z. And they're sort of a, if someone enjoyed Marley and Me by John Grogan, which remains a popular book to this day, still circulates a lot, even though it's now about 3 or 4 years old.
That's the one about, what, the world's greatest dog?
Labrador Retriever.
Yeah.
Whichever way you want to look at it. And these Bedlam Farm ones are very sweet in the same vein.
Where did he come up with the name Bedlam Farm?
I cannot remember if the farm was already named that or if he and his wife named that. Named it that. His wife continues actually to live in New Jersey, and she's employed in the city, and then she commutes up to the farm more on weekends.
That reminds me of another title that's been popular lately. It's fictional, though, The Art of Racing in the Rain. Oh, it's set from the dog's perspective about this family who the wife dies of cancer and the husband has to, like, involve himself in the legal battle to get his daughter back. But it's all from, like, the perspective of the dog. And I tell you, I don't usually get emotional about books, but this one, it's a tearjerker. Like, it's so good and sad.
Racing in the Rain.
The Art of Racing in the Rain, because the husband, his profession is to be a race car driver, and his speciality is racing in the rain.
What about travel books? I think Mary Kelly touched on this a little earlier in the show. For people who are looking for closer destinations, or for people who want to get as far away as they possibly can. What are the hot travel books?
Well, the hot one in the last year and a half was Eat, Pray, and Love.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
And I can't, what's her
Gilbert?
Name? Gilbert.
Elizabeth Gilbert.
Mm-hmm. And it's a story. And I'm sure that your listeners will know about this one. She spends she's a travel writer, actually, going through a rough divorce and talks her publisher into sponsoring her to go on a year away, and she spends a first third in Italy to learn about food and also to take Italian language lessons. And then she goes to India to deepen her spirituality. And then she goes to Indonesia, and there she finds love. And this is one I listen to in the car, and the author narrates it. And she has her descriptions of food in Italy were just so wonderful. And it starts out, I felt like a little self-possessed, a little self-absorbed, but I came to really become fond of her. And I learned so much about Italy and Indonesia and India. And so that's still popular. I don't see it in the branch very much. It's still going in and out.
Are you going to tell us how she found
No, that's a spoiler. I can't tell you how it ends.
What happened in Indonesia?
Well, you have to read the book because you do grow fond of her and want her to be happy again. Puts a lot of herself into that trip.
Mm-hmm. For some reason, this week, I keep going to my atlas. I've got a wonderful atlas. Are atlases in demand in your libraries? I don't know. It might
there
be an
is
odd
a satirical
thing,
one by The Onion that's out.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Which is, depending on your type of humor, can be riotous.
Yes.
But this, other than that, no.
What was it? What I was talking about earlier about the British crime novel, the Peak District of England. Uh-huh. I had no idea where that was. Mm-hmm. Derbyshire, I had no idea where Derbyshire was. And that's the last time I went to my atlas and found out it was east of Manchester and north of Birmingham in the northern half of England. But I don't know. For some reason, this week, and it's a little awkward because my atlas is a big one, and it's flat on a shelf underneath several other books. And every time I go to use it, I have to rearrange the entire bookcase. But I've done that at least three or four times this week.
And isn't that the great thing about books? It takes you somewhere else, and you learn about the world. And
yes. And it would be totally useless if it were audio.
Well, I don't know about that. Well, a story is a story.
There's an author I want to mention, and maybe someone will be using worldcat.org because he only wrote two books. He is the travel writer for the Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. His name is Thomas Swick, S-W-I-C-K. And I apologize that I read the book several years ago and cannot remember the title of it, but it's chapters on how he goes to write the stories. Like if he's supposed to write an article for the paper about cruising, he has to go take some cruises, which are not his cup of tea. But there you meet the man who no longer keeps a permanent address. He just goes from cruise to cruise, and he's on his 95th one at this point. And that is a charming book.
You would think that would be a wonderful life.
It comes off rather shallow and hollow,
for that
gentleman.
Mm-hmm. He's always, living out of a suitcase? An
older gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Going places he doesn't necessarily want to visit.
Right. Never really getting to know people. An interesting fun fact about traveling, though, is that 6 out of our top 10 circulating audiobooks are language learning. So, you sit in your car and you learn Mandarin Chinese, the complete language course. It's really a very smart way to learn language when you think about it.
Those are among the most popular books.
6 out of our 10 top circulating audiobooks are on learning a language, French, German, Chinese.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, are there any listeners out there who are learning a language with a tape or whatever it is that you got from
CDs now?
CDs that you got from the library? Could you call us, tell us how it's working out? We're down to our last 2 minutes, so you better hurry.
We also have on our website, and I'm not sure if you guys do too, but a premium resource for an online courses in languages as well.
Yes, we have Mango Languages.
Mango Languages, it's called.
Mango. Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost, we're out of time. Before we go, one last time around the table, anything you would urge a listener to do if they're desperate for a good book?
I have one that I'm chomping at the bit, waiting for it to come in. It's called The Story of Edgar Sawtelle by David Robleski. It's about the description is a mute teenager must avenge his father's death with the help of his trusty dogs. So it's Hamlet in rural Wisconsin, but with the twist that he's mute, so he has to find a way to communicate in other ways.
Anything else? We got about 20 seconds.
Unaccustomed Earth by Jhumpa Lahiri.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
She won the National Book Award for Namesake, for Interpreter of Maladies, and I would, just wonderful collection of stories of Bengali parents and their American-born and raised children.
Sandy, anything? Yeah. Okay, good, because we're out of time. That's it. Thanks to our callers and thanks to our guests, Mandy Knapp, Worthington Library, Mary Kelly, Columbus Metropolitan Library, Sandy Drake, Grandview Heights Public Library. Stay tuned. Stay with us after the news. We'll be talking about that Bold Spirit book. It's a fascinating story on listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.